B-Pod Studios.
The Sports Hub. It is Toucher and Rich, Joe Murray in studio, and on the phone with us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline, one of our favorites, Mr. Will Brinson, senior NFL writer for CBSSports.com. Mr. Brinson, did you enjoy the pictures that came out of Mr. Deion Sanders and Antonio Brown working out together? Apparently, this is a big thing in the making here.
I didn't see it. I'm thrilled I didn't see it. Each Antonio Brown story that I don't see or don't become aware of is it immediately becomes my favorite Antonio Brown story.
I saw that you had spoke about it on the Pick Six podcast. So apparently what you said about it was, I don't want to hear about it.
Yeah, I mean, look, he's a great player, and he's probably on football merit alone, probably a Hall of Famer. But I'm sort of at the, it's kind of a big scrap portion of the program. And for each Antonio Brown story that I can avoid, I feel a little bit better about myself. He's working out with everybody, and I don't think it matters. Like, who's signing him? They're going to suspend him immediately if somebody signed him, or at least put him on the exempt list. I don't know if what's happened with that investigation. I don't know about you guys, but everybody has things that they're doing on their to-do list that they're working through, and it's like it feels like throughout quarantine and now through all the terrible things that are just all the unrest that's going on in the general across the country, that sort of like some of these lower tier to-do list things have just No, falling by the wayside is like an insult.
Well, the reason, Will, why that story stood out to me is, you ever been scrolling through your timeline on a day where something like really bad happens? It's everyone's just, it's this, and everyone's just talking about this. I think it was Sunday when this happened. And, when all the rioting and looting was, I think at that point it had already been after Minneapolis. They went out to Los Angeles. There's been so much of it, I get my days mixed up. But I was scrolling through the timeline, and it was all pictures and all this stuff, and then I get to Deion Sanders, and it said, "Man, today was a great day." I'm like, hang on, what? Like, is he just completely unaware of everything that's around? And I'm not one of these people just going, "Oh, read the room," but I saw that.
I was on a text with some friends last night. We saw somebody we know tweeted out an accomplishment and then a gift, and it was like, "Nah, read the room," Deion, so blessed to be working out with this young man today. And it's like, no, Deion, read the room.
Here it is. It was on May 30th, which I think was maybe Saturday. And, the Minneapolis, and he just tweeted, "Today was an awesome day," with an exclamation point, hashtag truth. And I went, hang on, now I got to look at his timeline. I got to see what's going on. And it was him working out with Antonio Brown. And it's one of those things. To be honest, I would have probably never even seen that story if it wasn't just in the middle of everything that tweet was there. And I was like, oh my God. He probably had no idea of all this stuff. And then I see that right there. I'm like, what is going on?
So today was an awesome day. That's even better. Like, just in terms of just sheer, blindness to what is occurring, but today is an awesome day, truth. And it's like, okay, is he talking about the greater national discussion of what's going on? Because that would be a weird comment to make. Nope, he just worked out with Antonio Brown and decided to let the world know. There you go, Deion, way to be.
Well, so what did you make of the NFL statement during all this, where they came out saying that they support the protest? And you read it, and at least for me, as I was going through it, knowing exactly what's happened over the past couple of years with their opinion of peaceful protests, it was just one of those things where I'm like, the balls to put this out there into the universe, to actually have these words written and NFL, the NFL logo be at the top of it, I thought was pretty out there.
Yeah, I mean, it tells you, and they also had former exec and Goodell Lackey Joe Lockhart, who once upon a time worked, I think, on in and around the White House or on Capitol Hill, writes on CNN, Colin Kaepernick should have been signed. It's like, man, see, you had your chance. you were the one who could have made it happen 3 or 4 years ago. And yeah, I mean, look, it just goes to show, and people in the greater Boston, New England area already know this and don't need it repeated, but the NFL is tone deaf and just doesn't get it. Like, they just never get it. I mean, like, everything they do is always reactionary, and they view themselves as this, just unbelievably pristine organization that is, must comment on everything. It's like, no, you soiled yourself you sold your reputation in this arena already by everyone refusing to sign Colin Kaepernick when there was not a question about whether or not he could play at like a high enough level to be a backup. But we can go to all the there's just one in the landing spot for him, et cetera, because of certain owners being refusing to bring him in. But like, you already made your statement 3 or 4 years ago about peaceful protest. And it was a statement that you don't like them. And now you're coming out and you're like, we support peaceful protesters. Like, no, I mean, I'm not going to comment on it. It's sort of like if they were like, we love peaceful protesters, and at the same time, we're using tear gas to force people off a football field in the middle of the, reading the words where they say, we like peaceful protesters. That's what it would remind me of.
Right. It would seem a lot like that. And I guess the one thing that almost has saved the NFL from itself is you've got coaches like Brian Flores who come out with these statements that are just awesome. I mean, it's like, it's the perfect words. It's exactly what you need to be heard at exactly the right time. By the way, Brian Flores has done everything since he's left the Patriots to make me think that this guy could be a successful head coach in the NFL.
Yeah.
I mean, the way he had them playing last year at the end of the year when it didn't mean anything and playing hard each time, the way that he took games against Bill Belichick, it felt almost like personal, even though there's no real vendetta against the two of them. But it felt like it was, he really wanted to show this team that we can take on the best and punch them in the mouth.
Yeah, Rich, how soon before, and this is a question to ask, how soon are the Miami Dolphins really going to be a problem?
Well,
for people to play against.
I would say that, I think soon. I mean, look, so we're doing a all 32 series on the Pick Six podcast, and like we had the Cowboys and Dolphins. Don't worry about the order; it's a long story. But we're doing the East teams right now. We have the Cowboys and Dolphins coming out today, and I talked to Adam Beasley about it. I mean, he thinks they're going to be like wrapping it up. It's like, what's the ceiling for this team? What's the floor? And he's like, I think this team will play meaningful games in December. And I think that's probably a little bit of rose-colored glasses from Beast, but I don't think he's wrong. I mean, if Tua is what he was in college before he got injured, I mean, this team could be dangerous. Like, they fortified the offensive line, and we'll find out, whether or not they're, going to try and be, play young or try and go with some of the veterans early on. I mean, that might tell us what they think about their roster. But they have talent on the offensive side, and they loaded up on the defensive side. A bunch of former Patriots players that don't always work out well, but, talented guys who can make a difference. And then, the secondary is absolutely stacked. Right? So I think the Dolphins are going to be a problem. I mean, I don't think they'll win the division, but there's certainly there's a viable path where they do win the division and everything clicks right for them, and Tua is a rookie of the year. I mean, if Flores keeps on this path, they are going to be a big problem. I would say the one thing with Miami, though, like, you have to worry a little bit that the expectations are a bit high. I mean, if they're 6-10, that's a pretty good season from a team that we thought had the worst roster in the history of football less than a year ago. But if they go 6-10, my Dolphins fans and everybody's going to be very disappointed. So I think that's one of the problems in the NFL is, like, if your expectations get too far ahead of you, it can really burn you because people will be disappointed even though you had a good season.
But there's certain teams like them that, obviously with Brian Flores, they've got they've got potentially good DNA. You know, like, I mean, there's certain teams that you look at and you're like, well, they're just going to, I mean, like, the DNA, it's bad. Like, the Jets. Like, what's going on with the Jets right now, that's just bad DNA. And I know that, obviously, Fred's a huge Sammy D fan. It's not his fault. It's from the head down that you see the bad, like, failure DNA.
Like the Texans.
I see over there.
Right.
Texans, right. Like, the Texans. That's failure DNA that I see there.
Like, the Bills have great DNA.
Yes, exactly. Like,
They brought in even though the Pegulas, I would say that, you know, so we'll see how that affects. By the way, I don't know if you've seen it, but like the Pegulas, Tim Graham wrote about this for The Athletic, but like they have a mess on their hands right now in terms of their businesses. So that'll be interesting to watch. But like Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott and everybody, you know, from the top down to the football side of things, just knows how to win and has built a good winning culture. And if the Dolphins do build that, then yeah, I mean, that's going to be that's something that's sustainable over the course of time. And you're right. I love Sam Darnold too, but the Jets, mess.
Yeah. Hey, well, and I think about teams like that. Like, I mean, look at like the Colts, how they switched. And like, you know, once they got rid of, you know, when Ryan Grigson's there, it's like, that's just bad DNA. And now look what they've done. They've got Frank Reich in there. And this is a team that actually, you know, you look at that and you can say, all right, that's a team that at least has a culture that you can trust might be able to pull this out. You know, and then, as you said, Bill O'Brien, on the other hand, is when you just go, this is a organization that unfortunately, like the genetics from the head down are failure from ownership, from Bill O'Brien. And I'll tell you what, my perception of Bill O'Brien, unfortunately, I thought that he was going to be the guy when he left. And I thought he was going to be someone, even after he left like Penn State, I'm like, that's the kind of guy that if Belichick leaves, I want to be here in the Patriots. And I think the Kraft wanted that too. But, you know, now you look at it and like, how do you touch that guy with a 10-foot pole at coach? And maybe, I mean, who knows? Maybe he'll pull one out of his ass this year. I don't know what's going on. But you tell.
But like, the thing about Bill O'Brien is like, he just wins football games. It's really weird. So, I mean, I don't know. And maybe he is pulling out of his ass. I'm not sure. I mean, like, it's hard to tell. But, you know, maybe Deshaun Watson just makes it work for him. But like, you know, he had that one season where Deshaun Watson tore his ACL as a rookie, and that's his only season with less than 9 wins. I mean, I think that if you brought him in and you had a viable front office that he wasn't trying to overthrow and like take over and become GM, then he could, you know, you could do well and he could succeed because he does a good job as a coach. But the things that you see that are problematic are, you know, like a cornerback will struggle. And he'll cut him, you know, the coach will get mad at him, and then the GM, same guy, right, will cut him, like, on Monday. Or, you know, DeAndre Hopkins has an issue with, you know, Bill O'Brien, the coach, and that bleeds into his relationship with Bill O'Brien, the GM, who then doesn't want to pay him and decides to trade him for David Johnson. It's like, what are you doing? I mean, the Larry Tunsil thing, you know, Bill O'Brien trades for him because the coach, you know, as a coach, he really likes him. And then as the GM, he forgets that, you know, he needs to sign him to a deal before he acquires him for those first round picks, because otherwise he has to give him $6 million over market value. It's just, there's just these mistakes being made by the GM side of him that are being influenced by the coach side of him. And that's like the difference between Belichick. Belichick doesn't do that. He knows how to separate church and state when it comes to operating as a coach versus operating as a GM or a personnel guy. And Bill O'Brien hasn't learned that. The question is, can he survive these mistakes? Can they thrive, you know, with that culture going on? And if they, you know, if they can, and he can learn from him and change how he operates, then maybe it's a different story. But yeah, I agree. I just don't, like, you can't have him running everything. It just clearly, would you be surprised if he traded Deshaun Watson? Because I
no. Would. No, nothing would surprise me with him. No. Nothing would surprise me with him. I mean, but I mean, you also have to put it on him, the amounts, like what he was able to get back for getting rid of star players. Like, that's another thing you have to hold his feet to the fire on. Right. It's one thing that wasn't the right decision, but what did he get back? And it doesn't seem to be equitable. You know what I mean, Will?
He gave him 2 firsts for Larry Tunsil. I mean, and then gets a second round pick for DeAndre Hopkins plus. I remember we were doing the podcast and we were doing a show during like a free agency recap, and we're like, oh snap, like live on the whole recording it. We're like, oh, the Texans traded for David Johnson. That's crazy. And then like 5 minutes later, it's like, oh my God. We're like, you know, it was like a bad deal when it was just David Johnson for a second round pick. And then it was like, and DeAndre Hopkins is included. It's like, what? The whole thing was insane. And
checking to make sure that it's not one of those like mock accounts, like you know, during when everyone the fake woes and stuff.
Right.
I don't know how you bounce back from that, because it just seems like now that players have turned, they're speaking out. It's weird. The Texans, I'll never figure out.
Real quick, Will, before you go, we're about 100 days out from the beginning of the season. What are the guys the NFL starts on time?
I would say, I don't know, 60-70%. I mean, I would say 80% starts on time. 50-50 on what the fan situation is, though. I think that's the key. Like, we talked about a little bit with the about the Dolphins plan or whatever.
Yeah.
And I mean, if you're putting 15,000 people in Gillette Stadium, you still got to get 15,000 people out easily. You got to deal with beer lines. You got to deal with the bathroom. There's so many different things that go into it. And I think it's sort of a waiting game for these NFL teams. They're probably trying to plan these contingency situations, but it's hard to do that too. You have to figure out who's getting the tickets. How do you distribute? It's all so up in the air. And I think first and foremost, before they even worry about all that, they have to worry about the logistics of how do we put the football game on without endangering anybody who's going to be doing it. So I think they're sort of in a holding pattern right now. I would guess that there are a lot of teams, while they're trying to create plans and formulate sort of ideas and contingencies, they're also sort of like, all right, let's hope this thing is just, let's see what happens 2 weeks after, frankly, after Memorial Day, 2 weeks after all these protests, when everybody is out in the streets together closely, literally arm in arm, but a lot of people with no masks on. Like, let's see what happens after that, and then we'll have a better idea. Because if we don't see a spike, then it's like, all right, full bore training camp and the regular season is on. I mean, I think that's probably where we're at.
I just want to sit at a blackjack table, Will. I just want to go to a casino.
I do too, but I don't. It seems, like the idea of sitting down at a blackjack table with like three people chiefing cigs and your hands on that felt that's been mauled by 7,000 people already that day, it's a little less appealing than it used to be.
Did you see the picture that someone sent us? I retweeted it on our Touch and Rich account, and it's what Foxwoods, who's opening today, has set up, and it's this three seats at the table. And
with all the partitions?
Oh, yeah. Yep. It's like you're at a bank teller. You're gambling at a bank teller, and like the dealer is behind the glass, and you slide your stuff underneath it. And my first thought was, I could do that. I got no problem with that at all. I don't hate it.
Yeah, but I mean, like, you do lose a little bit of a table mojo, right? You're not exactly feeling, you're not catching a groove, like you're cheering through like four glass partitions is like, and the table is just mashing this dealer. No, I mean, I'll do it. I mean, I'm with you, but the spirit doesn't feel quite the same.
Hey, Will, would you do Josh Allen for MVP 50-1 odds?
I think that's one I looked at. I almost would rather take Sam Darnold. He's like 140-1 or 120-1 or 100-1. Here's the theory on that: is it's the same with Josh Allen, right? You have to ride the narrative. If one of those guys, whether it's Baker or Josh Allen or Sam Darnold, one of the third year guys is obviously not Lamar because he already did it, has a reasonable breakout year, and then they topple the division, they take the division down, there's going to be a big time narrative pushing them for MVP. So, like, if the Jets can manage to win that division, it's going to be because Sam Darnold played great. Or if the Bills win the division, Josh Allen will get some love. But they have that defense too. So, I don't mind Josh Allen. I think he could take a leap, and he could be a monster, and they could win the division and win 13 games, and he's going to get love for it. I love Josh Allen at 50-1.
All right, we've gone way over time. You're just too damn entertaining, Will Brinson. So,
that's fine. I got nothing.
Thanks for coming on with us. Once again, senior writer for CBSSports.com, the Pick 6 podcast that you can find where, Mr. Brinson?
Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever else you get your podcast. Two shows every day, Tuesday. Two shows Tuesday through Friday for the next 4 weeks.
Now, that was just way too complicated of an outro. So.
Yeah, I don't know what I just said.
We'll clean it up next time. All right, well, we'll talk to you soon, man. All right, see you, man. All right, we're way past the clock. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Toucher and Rich, the Sports Hub.
98.5 of Sports Hub. It is Toucher and Rich. We talked about J.R. Smith. There was that video of him. Was that in Los Angeles, John? Is that where he was?
I think that's correct. Okay. Fresh from his appearance on the Gronk game show.
Game on.
Yeah.
Tomorrow night.
He pulled some guy out of a car and beat the stuffing out of him because he was trying to break J.R. Smith's windows.
Yeah. So I guess that in this neighborhood, and it was a residential neighborhood, J.R. Smith comes out and sees this guy trying to smash his windshield, and the video starts with him meeting up with the guy. I guess he had chased him down the road, and when you first see the beginning of the film, this dude's, it's a like a white guy. He's lying on his back, and J.R. Smith is kicking the snot out of him. And then the guy finally is able to get up and just kind of, it looks like he doesn't know what direction is which and just runs as fast as he can to get away from J.R. Smith. Meanwhile, his buddies are like putting their hands in front of the cameras and saying, hey, don't film this. And J.R. Smith, at that point, I think knew that someone was going to find that video and run with it. So he made this video, like, explaining himself so it didn't look like he was just randomly beating up somebody.
One of these little motherfucking white boys didn't know where he was going and broke my fucking window in my truck. Broke my shit. This is a residential area. There wasn't no stores over here. No, none of that. Broke my window. I chased him down and whooped his ass. So if the footage come out and y'all see it, I chased him down and whooped his ass. He broke my window. This ain't no hate crime. I ain't got no problem with nobody ain't got a problem with me. It's a problem with the motherfucking system. That's it. The motherfucker broke my window and I whooped his ass. He didn't know who window he broke and he got his ass whooped. Just so y'all see it later, I'm telling y'all now.
Yeah, okay. So, I mean, and by the way, the video is unbelievable. He's just, like, kicking this guy. And, this is somebody – listen, if somebody's smashing into your car, it's something we all want to do. But the Michael McCann yesterday, who is a lawyer, was tweeting, even though we can all kind of sympathize with this – his life wasn't in danger, so this could be considered assault and battery, and J.R. Smith could be in trouble. And I'm like, yeah, like that guy is actually going to sue J.R. Smith. Somebody who was looting and rioting is going to show his face anywhere. And it got me thinking about, this when we were watching everything, on Monday night and all the stuff that was happening downtown, there was a moment where there was a camera that had set up right across the street from Copley Square. Now, if you know where the entrance is at Copley, it's right off Dartmouth. It's like this big glass entrance that's directly across from the train station there, the Back Bay train station. You cross the street, and it's a massive glass entrance. One of the, I think it was Channel 7, had brought their cameras over there, and at that time where cars were pulling up, and people were jumping out of the car. One guy would still be in the driver's seat, and someone would run in. Now, someone had smashed the glass in there, so they were running inside, grabbing a bunch of clothes, and getting outside while the car was waiting, and then they would speed off. Meanwhile, the news camera, with a big light on it, so they know the news camera is there, is zooming in on their faces. Many of them have taken their masks off, and on top of that, zooming in on their license plates. And I'm like, how dumb can you be? You pull up in front of a news camera, you're jumping inside, you're grabbing all this stuff, they're seeing your face, you're doing all of this. Well, the mayor of Buffalo yesterday, he is a gentleman I think we could all rally behind. And he said this. So he had to get out and he had to talk to the people, obviously, because they've had some issues as well. And here's the mayor of Buffalo.
And I want to send a message to the idiot on camera that lit a fire in City Hall by throwing a box that was on fire through a window. We have you on camera. You idiot, we are going to find you and prosecute you to the full extent of the law.
You idiot.
You idiot.
And like you've heard the mayor of like Atlanta, like there's, it's this situation has just turned people into, it's. Like nobody has a filter now, which is awesome. And as far as the mayors, they're speaking like normal like human beings and not like not all of them, but a lot of them are speaking like normal human beings and not politicians. Did you hear Atlanta's mayor who was like screaming, "Get your ass back home!" Like yelling, yeah. Talking like a normal human being because they realize this is such an insane situation, and this is not a time for keeping your appearances. This is a time for you to speak your mind, and it's been pretty refreshing, to be quite honest.
You idiot.
I mean, because he's right. And I kept thinking that as I'm watching these people loot right in front of this camera. And, you know, obviously those are all going to get turned in. The tags are all going to get turned in. And you might be sitting there for a little bit thinking that you got away with it because, obviously, these police have their hands full right now. But that doesn't mean a month from now you're not going to get a knock on your door and it's going to be these people. And even J.R. Smith, he did an interview with Pat McAfee yesterday, and he kind of explained a little more, you know, what had happened, because he obviously wants the world to know that he just didn't pick a random guy to beat up on. And he said this.
Now, you want to peacefully protest? 100%. We can do that. But once you get to vandalizing people's personal property that has nothing to do with nothing, honestly, I'm the only black guy on my block. So for you to randomly just thinking you're doing something for the people, the one black person who was able to get out the situation and move into a nice neighborhood and do all of those things that we aspire to do, you broke that person's window without even knowing. So it's like people are consistently doing stuff when you don't even know what you're doing it for or why you're doing it. You, out of all the people, granted, if he would have seen me and seen somebody outside the car or outside the house or whatever, do I think he would have broke it? Absolutely not. It was just a random act of stupidness, and I give him that. But that ass whooping was a random act of stupidness on my behalf.
I got to file that one away. A random act of stupidness.
Yeah,
that's perfect.
But that is, but that's another thing that we're seeing a lot of. I mean, it's you're starting to see, not starting to, there's been a lot of it. And there was a lot in Boston, too. And these were people who were there for the anarchy. And there were some people who showed up who are, you know, many people are speculating that they're part of, you know, hate groups to go down there and cause the chaos. But I've seen many situations where you've got, like, someone who's a white person spray painting Black Lives Matter on the side of a building. Mm-hmm. And then you have a black person going up to them going, give me that spray paint can. We don't want – that's not what we want. That's not what we're here for. What are you doing? And it's just – it's become this strange amalgamate of people doing – with all different agendas. And people are keeping – and it's almost like don't let that take your eyes off of what's important at this time. And there's been so much of that. And if you're a protester and you're someone who's doing it peacefully, that stuff's got to piss you off. But I'll say, if I was J.R. Smith and I saw some guy trying to smash my windshield, I'd want to do the exact same thing.
Oh, yeah.
So I think we can all kind of empathize with him at that point. And we sure as hell can empathize with the mayor of Buffalo.
You idiot.
When you see that kind of stuff. So, and that's the other thing too, is that, you know, the FBI is now asking for, if you have any pictures, you know, if you were down there and you've got cell phone video pictures, they want that because they want to make arrests of the people who are doing the destruction of that. So, I mean, just know that there's these cameras out there. And just like the mayor of Buffalo said, I got to hear this one more time. I have to hear this one more time.
And I want to say, a message to the idiot on camera that lit a fire in City Hall by throwing a box that was on fire through a window. We have you on camera, you idiot. We are going to find you and prosecute you to the full extent of the law.
And then he smashed somebody through a flaming table at a tailgate. It was fine after that. I can't even imagine.
The initiation to get you elected.
Yeah, that's probably it. All right, 617-779-0985. Right after Joe Murray's headlines, we will get to the stack.
Now it's time to get to the stuff that we couldn't get to. It's the stack.
Now, if I'm a sports hub, it is Toucher and Rich. And Joe Murray, you've got a sponsor for the stack.
Yeah, it's Window Nation. Buy two, get two free sale. No down payment, no payments, and 0% financing for 12 full months. WindowNation.com.
Real quick, before we get to the stack, we have some business to take care of. As you heard earlier in the show, or maybe you didn't, go to the podcast, listen to it at 8 o'clock. It's worth hearing John fail so miserably. We played I Rule. John went 0 for 5 in hip-hop and R&B from the 90s, which is his category. Mm. Like, that is, like, he is, it's no question whether he knows a lot about it. He is a savant. It's just when the pressure was on, John, you admit that you choked.
Of course I did.
Okay.
No, we were talking in the studio and I was ripping him off to Joe. No, I choked. I definitely choked.
Yeah, I don't want this to be the last taste in people's mouth as far as I don't want there to be an impression that you're a big time choker. So we're going to give you a chance to redeem yourself tomorrow.
Yeah.
And that is we're going to do another edition of I Rule with
I Rule.
So, but we thought to be completely fair, everyone would get to pick their own category. Five things that they can identify, usually in 5-second clips immediately. They have 3 seconds to identify it. Joe has picked grunge music, and he's going to do that. I believe I'm going to do one-hit wonders, like alternative one-hit wonders starting in the 90s. And John, you... what have you chosen? Because I know it was not, you want to do something 90210 because that's the only other topic that I would say outside of R&B that you are a savant at. Like, it's hysterical how much you know about that. It's kind of scary.
The question is, and I was talking with Mike Lockhart in the back room about this, how we're going to do it. And it's harder to do it, just audio clips. So what the agreement we kind of came to was, secondary characters not in the opening credits over the first 6-7 seasons. I mean, asking me to pull out a tertiary character from like season 10 when no one was watching, we think is a bit much. So first 6 or 7 seasons, secondary characters not in the opening credits, 5-second sound clip.
Okay, so we're going to play a clip of somebody who is on 90210 who is not one of the main people in the opening credits, and you just have to identify them.
Correct.
Okay, all right. Now, when I mentioned it before, no one in the opening credits, I said, like the owner of the Peach Pit. You said, that's correct. And you said his name, and I don't really know what it is. But Ryan Johnson tweets in, it says, excuse me, Rich, but the owner of the Peach Pit was in the open. The one and only Joey Tata.
Yeah.
John Wallach should have known that.
Well,
so you're already choking,
well,
John.
Well, no, the answer to and Ryan is right. Partially, Joey Tata was only in the opening credits for seasons 8, 9, and 10.
Oh.
Or 7, 8, 9, and 10. The first 6 or 7 seasons, he was not in the opening credits. So I don't know how you want to
people like all the
judge
else, like aging out of the show. So they put Joey Tata in there.
Yeah, that actually it's true. When the Walshes moved away, when Brandon's parents moved away, they added him into the back end of the opening credits.
That seems like probably when it was time to.
Yeah, it's time to go.
True. 90210, when the owner of the Peach Pit is one of your marquee people.
That's correct.
All right, so that's what we got. We'll do that tomorrow, and hopefully you'll be able to redeem yourself. That will be a. So I'll be rooting for you, John. Trust
Thanks. I appreciate that, Rich.
Now, I saw this story, and it just to put perspective on how long this quarantine has lasted, or has felt like it's lasted. It was a story about the Tiger King and some of the people from the Tiger King. And that came out right when everyone went in lockdown pretty much. And that seems like 2 years ago when all of that was happening. Mm-hmm. And the Tiger King, when that was such a big thing, seems like forever. And I read this story and that was the first thing that stood out to me. It was like, I can't believe it's only been like 2.5 months since that was out. But the other thing is, the whole thing ended with his thing in turmoil, his big zoo that he had, and all the lions that he loved, and Carol Baskin, who many people thought she fed her husband to the lions, that they think that she was the one who did it, and then there was a lawsuit. Well, now it ends up Carol Baskin, according to the courts yesterday, ruled that she gets to take control of Joe Exotic's zoo. She is now the owner of Joe Exotic, the GW Exotic Animal Memorial Park in Wynwood, Oklahoma.
Well, wait, what about his millionaire buddy who took over? What happened to
him? So apparently it's been under the control of that guy, Jeff Lowe, in recent years, but it now has to be handed over to Baskin. She's been granted operational control of it by a judge who found that the property was fraudulently transferred to Joe Exotic's mother years ago in order to hide it from any kind of assets that could be garnished in a lawsuit. So that dude, like super cool Harley Davidson do-rag guy, Mr. Jeff Lowe, has 120 days to vacate the premises, including all of his animals residing there. So she now not only owns that ranch that he like hated her so much about, she owns that ranch, but she also owns every animal that's on there, including Joe Exotic's old ones and this guy, Jeff Lowe. So she got the ultimate revenge in all of this. However, the price was that the world now thinks that she murdered her husband and fed him to the lions. So I don't know if the revenge was worth it, but in the end, she gets the zoo. So
what is Joe Exotic thinking about in jail at this point after finding this out?
I don't know.
He's trying to do his own reality show from jail. That was a real story.
Yeah, I'd watch that.
He's trying to figure out a way that he can do like a TV show from jail. And I don't know how you can.
Maybe they'd be like subscription based, like we were talking about at the beginning of the show, you know. Another subscription we get is Joe Exotic in jail.
Yeah. Well,
I'm like $5.99 a month.
I'm going to go ahead and throw it out there. Do you remember how, like, for the last couple of years, Post Malone was the most overdone Halloween costume? Mm. Get ready for this year. Yeah. Everyone's going to be Joe Exotic and Carole Baskin together. Everyone is going to be that. So just, if you're planning on doing that, just know there's going to be 14 other people at the party who are going to have the same exact costume. So it better be damn good. Well, DeSean Jackson is a guy that I think is speaking my language. So he was doing an interview recently, and they were talking about what it's like or what it's going to be like to be on the football field without any fans. And he said, well, this should be an advantage to the viewers. You know, everyone's talking about fake crowd noise. Here's what he had to say about what they should do to the players while they're on the field.
It's going to definitely be a culture shock. I think it's going to be very more.
Unless they start micing up everybody.
Yeah, it's going to get crazy. I mean, I think they should, though, bro. They should give the fans, like, an insight to really see what goes on in between the white lines, bro. It gets crazy, bro. It definitely does. I know in the trenches it get crazy, and I know out there on the outside it gets crazy, too, the conversations we going back and forth on.
That's what I've been saying. Why are you going to put in fake crowd noise and drown out what we're going to – this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity where we get to hear what they're saying on the football field because there's no fans for the very first time. Now, I know why the networks would do it, and that is to drown out any swearing that these people might have so they might not have to dump out every – basically after every play. But for us – we should be rallying around the fact that we don't want any kind of audio interference. I want to hear every single word, every single piece of trash talk that they throw out there. We're hopefully never going to get this again where there's games with no fans. And if you waste that opportunity and throw it away by covering that an amazing part up by using fake fans, then that's just – then what are we doing?
Honestly, I mean, this is a golden opportunity for the players, too. I mean, one thing that everyone wants is a player with personality. And if you let your personality come out on the field, more people are going to ask you to do talk shows, more people. Maybe it winds up being an endorsement for you somehow or another because a certain company likes the way you act on the field. I mean, there are other opportunities out there for players to make more money if there are no fans in the stands. It seems that people are not seeing this.
Think about the best moments from Hard Knocks. Some of the best moments from Hard Knocks, other than, of course, you know, Mr. Wiley huffing and puffing around with his offensive line coach, or like Rex Ryan, who was just amazing. Think about the best parts, Joe. It's when they're trash talking on the field and when they're fighting. And they, I mean, how many great episodes have opened up with a fight during practice and you can hear every single word when they're on top of each other? That's what you want to see. Why would you pass up that opportunity by putting fake crowd noise under there?
I don't think they will. I mean, there have been talks about it. Who said that? Was it Troy? Oh, no, Joe Buck, right?
That was DeSean Jackson.
DeSean Jackson. Yes.
Yeah, no, I'm saying Joe Buck earlier this year, though, mentioned something about crowd noise here. No, I'd rather I love the UFC when it's not mic'd up. You know, right now you can hear everything. You can actually hear the play-by-play people. I think this would be really good. And I think it'd be good in all the sports, whether it's hockey, you know, the NBA in particular. I think there'll be a ton of trash talk when it comes to NBA. So football, yeah, we'll probably hear like the linemen actually hitting, and you know, we already hear the now at the line. So it'd be great during
football.
Stuff
in a dog pile. You know, that kind of stuff.
And here's the thing, too, is that if I'm CBS and I heard Joe Buck saying that Fox was more than likely going to put crowd noise and going to put like fake crowds, that, you know what I'm thinking? Please. And we'll be the guys that don't. And we're going to be the ones that stand out. And everyone's going to want to – like it just is going to make you look better. Because I've also had this thing in my head that it's like, what do you think, we're idiots? And I know that some people like to watch the Bundesliga one and heard like the – and got excited when there were fake crowds. Dude, that's going to get old quick. Like maybe the first game you're like, oh, thanks, I missed this. And the second game you're like, what are we doing? Like, I mean, how many times – like there's no crowd there. We're not dumb. Don't put these fake chants like, go team, go, and boo. We don't need – that we're not, as I said, it's like having a live fake studio audience there. It's like watching the Brady Bunch. We've gotten used to The Office, all right? This is a different generation of viewers. We get it. And on top of that, we understand, look at the stands. There's no one there. Don't be a dumbass and throw that in there and waste a golden opportunity. I don't understand. If they end up doing that, that's, I don't know. We deserve what we get. All right.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.